Welcome everybody, welcome friends. Thank you for joining us here to discuss a subject that is really fascinating, I think, and that there is a lot of complexity about this subject that may not be very well known in general. The concept of the Akashic Records was actually developed by members of the Theosophical Society in late 19th century. There are some references to similar concepts, but not very specific. You see in the Bible, for example, that it is said that there are angels recording angels that are recording whatever happens on earth, for example. And there are some similar concepts in different traditions, but as I said, they are not very specific. So part of the aim of the Theosophical Society when it was founded was to bring to public awareness a knowledge of this side of life and the universe, which is part of what we really are and is part of our environment. So it is necessary to know about this, or it's useful to know about this. And this will give us a greater or wider understanding of life. Now, before we go into the subject itself, I would like to introduce the idea of how we know these things. And I think that context is important to be able to understand the subject. Let us do a little history first about how in humanity we try to know things, how we try to get in touch with the environment around. You know, at the beginning of civilization, at least the one that we know of, the one that we have a recorded history, the way to understand the world was through myths, through stories. And the myth has a lot of potentiality. I cannot go into that, but even though the myth is a story, because of how the universe is actually, let's say, because the universe is ruled by laws that are applied on different levels in the same way, when in a story you capture the essence of a law, then you can apply that essence to the different ways, the different levels in which the law works. So, for example, when you explain something from a scientific point of view, it's very specific and cannot be extrapolated or applied to something different, because science tries to develop a particular word, a particular concept for a very specific phenomena that is researching. But with myth, you have a completely different approach. It's not so specific, but it allows you to understand the universal concept behind. Now, as humanity develops, there is an awakening in the intellectual mind, and there is the need to understand through concepts, through more specific concepts. So in the West, we developed what we call philosophy with the Greeks. The history of the development of thought in the East is a little different, and also in other parts of the world. But just to give a reference, I'm going quickly to see how there is a natural development that changed the way we relate to the world. So we developed philosophy. That philosophy began to be the foundation for religion. We have the Western religions. In time, religions became very dominant, and not only at the level of thinking and faith, but also at the political level. Then in the West, we went into a dark period where faith was imposed, in a sense, and the idea of questioning something was threatening for the power that the Western religions were having. So as a reaction to that, we come 500 years ago, or for the last 500 years, we come to what we can call the scientific revolution, where thinking begins to be the way to understand the world. And little by little, this thinking, intellectual thinking, took over the consciousness of humanity. And today we have a very secular culture. Even though there are religions, there are spiritual organizations like this one, what actually rules the world is not a philosophical endeavor, it's not a religious feeling, it's based on the intellectual understanding of the world in science, technology, politics, economy. So the mind takes over, and with that we lose the feeling of religiosity, generally speaking, as a culture. And again, I'm talking about what happened in the West, because we are here. So there are waves in humanity. You can say that, you can see that there are waves during which time a particular aspect of the human being is developed. So at the end of the 19th century, when science began to be the voice to explain the universe, you know, by the end of the, I'm a scientist, or my formation is as a scientist, and I remember in college, my teacher said that at the end of the 19th century, scientists thought that they, in a matter of few years, they were going to be able to explain everything in the universe through science. This was even before relativity, quantum physics, knowing that the atom was divisible. They thought that it was just a little ball of matter. But there was this sense that we can explain everything through science. And the universe is just a clock that works automatically. There is no need for a God, for spirituality, for nothing that cannot be proved. We can prove or explain how the universe works just through science. So at that point, the Theosophical Society was founded, and the founders said that one of the main aims was to bring together science and spirituality. Actually, the society was the first attempt at bringing together science and spirituality. And Blavatsky, one of the founders, said that there was a psychic wave coming up in humanity, meaning that more and more people would begin to be born with a psychic perception, a more sensitive to the psychic world. So part of what she tried to do is to set the foundations to understand the psychic world. Not only this, Blavatsky was actually more interested in the spiritual world, and we are going to see the difference, but because of the cycle that was coming, it was important to try to set the foundations for a right understanding of it. Now, there are three realms in nature. There is a physical realm, the psychic realm, and the spiritual one. The psychic and the spiritual realms are different. Normally, we tend to think that if it is not physical, it is spiritual. So we use the word spiritual in a kind of general way or loose way. Now, technically speaking, both the physical and the psychic realms are based on senses. We perceive the world through the physical senses. We have also what we could call psychic senses, and we can perceive the world through the psychic senses. The psychic senses are extensions of the physical senses in a certain way. For example, we can see physical objects. You can develop as a clairvoyant, and you can see non-physical objects, auras, devas, thought forms, things that are not physical, but that are really objects, non-physical objects. Or we can hear sound, or you can develop as a clairvoyant, or as a clairaudient, and hear astral sounds, as they are called sometimes. Or we can move around physically, or you can move on your astral body. you know, the astral projection. So the psychic world is an extension of the field of experience through the senses. Now, the spiritual world and the spiritual faculties, they have to do with something completely different. The spiritual powers are the ones that we normally associate with religion in a good sense, in the sense of the power of being peaceful, of being poised, the compassion, wisdom, joy. All these are manifestations of the spiritual nature, not the psychic nature. We can develop all our psychic aspect, our psychic senses, and they are not going to affect our spiritual maturity. We may be very spiritually mature, and we may have a lot of psychic sensitivity, or we may be very spiritual and have no psychic sensitivity. These are parallel developments, just like intelligence. I don't think any here would say that to be smart implies that you are spiritual. We know that the world is full of smart people that are doing terrible things. So we know that these are two independent developments. A person may be very spiritual and very smart, or very spiritual and illiterate. They are independent. So the same with psychism. Now, because the psychic senses are part of human beings, they will naturally develop in humanity, in time, with evolution. And as Blavatsky was saying, there is a cycle right now in which the psychic senses begin to awaken. Now, the psychic world is a whole universe. It's very complex. It has its own rules, its own laws. And if we are going to develop this kind of psychic perception, we need to learn about this. We need to learn about the laws, how things work, because perception depends a lot on interpretation. You need to be able to interpret rightly what is coming through your senses, whether physical or psychic. So this is part of what the Theosophical Society wanted to do, to provide a foundation for this understanding. Blavatsky explained that there is something that she called occult science, which is the study of all these hidden aspects of life in a systematic way, with a training attached to it, with a deep study of the laws, just as what we do in science. And she says that in the world, there are some people who are proficient in the occult science. In the East, they know about this. If you have read about the Raja Yoga, for example, this is a kind of yoga discipline that is not based on the asanas, on the physical exercises, but it's more based on meditation and a kind of a particular discipline of life. And in the Yoga Sutras, there is a description of all these different psychic powers that are latent in human beings, and there is a whole discipline that leads to the development of the psychic powers and beyond. More importantly, to the development of the spiritual faculties. And actually, Patanjali, who is the one that kind of compiled all the teachings on this subject, he described all the psychic powers because these are things that actually happen as a person follows this discipline. But then he said these are actually obstacles for the spiritual enlightenment, especially if we don't understand how to relate to this. The physical senses are also obstacles if we don't know how to relate to them. And you can see, if you sit down to meditate, the main obstacle is our senses. We are distracted with sounds, with smells, and then that triggers our mind. So you can see how the physical senses are obstacles for meditation unless you learn how to relate to them, how to control them so that they don't interfere. And in the same way, the psychic senses are obstacles for meditation or enlightenment, because again, they bring us out of our awareness to see objects. And the idea in the spiritual development is to come inside and to realize the essence of what we really are. Now, that doesn't mean that we should deny this, the psychic sense. These are part of a human being. But we need to learn how to relate to them so that they actually don't become an obstacle. So in the Yoga Sutras, there is an explanation of a systematic training by which all these psychic powers and, as I said, more importantly, the spiritual faculties are developed. When Blavatsky talked about these, she called them Mahatmas or adepts, these enlightened beings who are proficient in yoga, we didn't know anything about that in the West. All the yoga teachings came actually several decades after the Theosophical Society was founded, and it was a society that started translating all these subjects. But she explained that living in communities outside the world, there are these adepts, these yogis, who are proficient in the occult science, and part of their work is to help in the human evolution, to become spiritual teachers, for example, but also to train people who are spiritually mature so that they can help humanity in the process of growth. So she explains that these adepts have developed an occult science, a system with the knowledge of all this hidden side of life and the knowledge of how to live so that all this can be verified by people who can live that kind of, lead that kind of life. So she, let me read a quote. She says that this system is no fancy of one or several isolated individuals. It is the uninterrupted record covering thousands of generations of seers whose respective experiences were made to test and to verify the traditions passed orally by one early race to another. So she says there is a chain of, you know, today with the idea of knowing a little about Hinduism and Buddhism, we know about this chain that, of traditions that are passed from guru to disciple and to disciple. And in many cases, it is unbroken. So this is what Blavatsky is talking about here. But the idea is that these teachings have to be verified by each one of the disciples, just as we do in science. I studied science first theoretically, and then I had to do the experiments and verify that what I was studying was correct. So she says, for long ages, these wise men passed their lives in learning by checking, testing, and verifying in every department of nature the traditions of old by the independent visions of the great adepts, that is, men who have developed and perfected their physical, mental, psychic, and spiritual organizations to the utmost possible degree. No vision of one adept was accepted till it was checked and confirmed by the visions obtained by other adepts and by centuries of experiences. Just a footnote, when she says men is a general word, at that time there wasn't this gender problem in the language. There are women that are adepts, and Blavatsky was a woman, and she was very proficient in many of these aspects. So there is an occult science that has a very specific teaching and a specific training to develop all this. Now, these adepts are physical people. You know, sometimes in the New Age, there is the idea of ascended masters, which is taken from the theosophical view of the masters of wisdom, but is different in several points. In the theosophical view, these adepts are physical people. They are alive, they are living in different parts of the world, usually retired from society, but since they have developed all these psychic powers, they can communicate with anybody they would choose without space being a problem. And part of their aim is to find spiritual people who can be trained in basically in spirituality. Not so much in psychic abilities, but the psychic abilities in a spiritual person can become useful. It's just if you have power and you are a good person, you will use that power to help, whatever power you have. It may be intelligence, it may be money, it may be time, maybe whatever it is. If you are mature, if you are unselfish, you will use it to help humanity. So same with psychic powers. If you are mature, you will use it to help humanity. Now, they say that the requirement to train a person is not that the person is smart, that has a lot of knowledge, or that has a lot of psychic abilities, nothing like that. The requirement is that the person is spiritual in the sense of unselfish, that is not ego-driven, that is looking to help others, not to be, you know, famous, to make money, to do this or that. Many times these people help in a completely anonymous way. Actually, the people who are trained by the adepts are normally, they normally keep secret this fact. They are not interested in promoting themselves. They just help. So we have two kinds of people that can perceive the psychic world. Those who are trained, and those who are born with psychic abilities, but don't have a particular training. And what we normally deal with is people who, and many of us, may be the case of many of us, who have certain psychic sensitivity, but not a specific training to understand and to be able to interpret correctly the psychic experience. For example, one theosophist that was, his name is Leadbeater. Many, many subjects, chakras, the Akashic records, past lives, many, many of these subjects that are very common today were originated from Leadbeater. And when he explains this training, he said that, for example, he was a very deep clairvoyant, and that the adepts would present something, some astral figure, and he had to be able to determine whether it was a thought form, an elemental, the aura of a dead person, the aura of a person that is alive, a deva, an adept. And he would say, I would try and I would fail, and then they would say, try again, and there is a very specific training, not something vague, just a training as you have in science. And little by little, you learn how to interpret the psychic perception. So when dealing with all this, we have to keep that in mind, because as humanity, we are learning to interpret the psychic perception. Except for these people that are trained and that then they try to teach, as many of these people did, then there are many people who teach and try to train without necessarily knowing. When talking about spirituality, we have to be rational and not be naive. Not everybody that says something knows what he's talking about. Even myself, you cannot assume that I know what I'm talking about. Because some people are honest and they think they know, and they may be confused. Many people are just making a business, and they want you to pay them, and you know they will say whatever you want to hear. Some other people may be honest and may be right. So we cannot assume that everybody knows what they are talking about. And this is not to be skeptic in the wrong sense. It's just to be, you know, grounded and rational. For example, something that this group of theosophists used to do is several of them were clairvoyant, and they would try to see the same thing, the same phenomena, all independently, and then compare if they saw the same. You can do that if you go to psychic people, You can do that. Go to several of them and see if what they see match. You know, not with a skeptic spirit, but this is a science, and know that there will be mistakes because as humanity we are starting developing this, and just go by your intuition too, but be rational and see what things really sound true, not just because somebody says it. So I want to explain, this is a kind of long introduction, but I think it's necessary because the psychic realm of things is becoming so important in spirituality that we need to have this foundation. So one last thing before we start examining in particular the Akashic Records is that if we don't try to work on this aspect of spirituality too, the aspect of trying to understand how things work, trying to work on getting rid of the ego and the expectations and the fear, you know, gradually, this is part of the spiritual training that has to be attached to the psychic development, if you are interested in the psychic development or if you were born with psychic sensitivity. If we don't do that, we may end up being more confused than before. Because what happens when we become sensitive is that we begin to perceive more and more from the world than before, and many times it becomes kind of a chaos of perceptions. And it's difficult to put the two worlds together, because the one that puts everything together is the soul. So if we don't work in awakening the soul, when the soul is trying to work through the body and through the psychic bodies, the soul is confused with all this. And you can see it. Some people are psychic and they are very wise. Some other people are psychic and they are very confused. And the only difference is the maturity of the soul. So this is important for each one of us to work on this level too. Blavatsky, for example, said that Blavatsky was very psychic and she had a hard time putting herself together. When she was young, she was kind of all over the place because she was extremely psychic. And then she went around the world trying to find spiritual wisdom. She met one of these yogis and they trained her, and she always says, if not for them, I would be dead. And she was very psychic. And then she said, a problem with psychism is that there is a tendency to dwell on this subtle sense perception, on the psychic perception, which may produce an atrophy of the intelligence. It's not different from what happens with a drug. You know, the psychic world may become very enticing, and then the person begins to dwell more and more on the psychic experience and becomes unable to live in the world. And eventually, even the intelligence can be dulled. So again, I'm not saying that the psychic senses are wrong or bad in themselves. Just like anything else, we need to deal with them with intelligence and in the right way. So she says, by attempting to perceive on the inner planes, we are bringing another element of disorder and from another plane, thus mixing both planes. And the real danger is in the confusion of the soul by introducing strange things to it before the time. So she talks about before the time, because we need to work on awakening the soul, as I was saying, along with the development of the psychic senses, if you are naturally inclined to that. So if this happens in the context of spiritual maturity, then there is no problem, there is no danger. The problem is when you even see it with the intellectuality, if sometimes people who are too intellectual, they have a lot of emotional problems. They are people who don't know how to manage the emotions, because If we develop an aspect of our being over other aspects of our being, then we produce a lack of balance. So this is what Blavatsky is saying here, basically. So with this context, let us explore the Akashic records and what they are, how they look like, and then we can talk a little about the discipline that can help us work in this direction. So in the theosophical view, there are several planes or dimensions in the universe. One that we all know is the physical dimension that we perceive through our physical senses. Then there is a subtler aspect of the physical that is sometimes called etheric, and that is not too difficult to see. It's a little aura that is around people, objects. Sometimes it's called the health body, or because it's the counterpart part through which life or prana flows. And a number of people have the ability to see the etheric plane or the etheric aspect of things. Then we have what we call the emotional plane. It's also called the astral plane. This is the realm of emotions. On this plane, every emotion is actually a kind of energy that can be perceived, can be communicated. And then there is the mental plane, which is a plane of thoughts, where thoughts are realities. Now, on the emotional plane, there is what sometimes is called the astral light. And on the mental plane are the Akashic records. Now, the subtler the plane, the more difficult it is to perceive it. So we all perceive the physical. A relatively larger number of people perceive the etheric. Some people perceive the astral plane, the emotional, and relatively fewer people perceive the mental. There are higher planes too. They belong to the spiritual world, but the mental plane is like the boundary between the psychic world and the spiritual one. But we are going to concentrate on these two planes because it is on those planes, on the emotional and the mental, where we can find these records. So let us talk a little about what these records are. Whenever the idea in theosophy is that there are three aspects of the universe that are always present everywhere. It is matter, energy, and consciousness or spirit. So any kind of matter has an aspect of energy and has an aspect of consciousness. Of course, the consciousness doesn't imply a human consciousness. It's not that the table can think or can perceive through senses as we do or as animals do. But there is consciousness latent there, which at the level of the table expresses itself as what we call the chemistry or the chemical laws of the matter. These chemical laws or of force, when the whole organism develops from a bacteria to a human being, they become to produce or to express what in human beings we call consciousness. So it's the same expression of the same universal principle, but on different levels of complexity. So whenever we think, for example, we are at the same time, there is consciousness involved, there is an energy that we are producing, and there is a matter that is being affected. So the idea is that any motion, any thought, any emotion is impressed on this matter, the matter aspect of the universe. And this matter is, again, forms the different planes. Just like the physical matter forms the physical plane, there is an etheric matter that forms the etheric plane and the astral or emotional matter, etc. So matter is interpenetrating each one of the planes, just as energy and consciousness. So whenever something happens, it is impressed in the matter on all planes. Now, the matter on the astral plane that it's many times called the astral light in theosophical literature and in other literature too. The astral light retains a record of everything that happens, and so does the Akashic records. But because of the quality of the matter, these records are different. So, for example, let me read a couple of descriptions as to the records that are on the astral light. It is said that, for example, Leadbeater said that upon the astral plane, the reflection of any of these records is usually seen as a simple picture, though occasionally the figure is seen as endowed with motion. People who are clairvoyant and are able to see sometimes they are called the astral tablets or the records on the astral plane, they can see pictures that are associated with people, with events, with places, with objects. There are different ways of seeing the astral records. For example, something that was very quite famous in the early 20th century was to try to see the astral records either on mirrors or in vessels. You know the idea of the crystal ball? Well, that is also part of it. In a surface that is kind of circular, you can concentrate part of the astral matter, and then fixing your eyes there, you can see the reflection of certain records. Blavatsky explains that, she says, if the astral light is collected in a cup or metal vessel by willpower, and the eyes fixed on some point with a strong will to see, a waking vision is the result, if the person is at all sensitive. The reflections in the astral light are seen better with closed eyes. So some people use some kind of object where they can collect the astral light, whether they know it or not. That's the matter always follows consciousness. You know, we want to lift the arm, and the first thing that happens is that in my consciousness comes the idea to lift the arm. And then that induces the willpower, and then the physical body follows that. Same with the matter on any plane. If you will it, you are moving the matter. So the more, you know, a baby needs some time to learn how to direct the will so that the body does what he wants. So same with this, even though with our willpower we can move matter around, it requires a certain training or trial and error until we learn how to do it. Now, the idea is that through your willpower, you can collect some astral matter, and then if you are sensitive, if you can see on the astral plane, you can see reflections of the records there. And what records you are going to see depend on what's in your mind. You attract the record according to what your inquiry is, what is in your mind. Now, there is a problem with the records on the astral light, because the astral light is very restless. Trying to look at the records on the astral light is like trying to look at the reflection of the moon in a ruffled lake. You know, the astral light being the emotional plane is being constantly disturbed. So when you try to see the records on the astral light, then normally you see only fragments of them, or you see them mixed up, or you see them distorted. So it's not recommended to try to see the records on the astral light. Let me see, for example, Madame Blavatsky said that the astral light is called the great sea of illusion. And unless the clairvoyant or seer can get beyond this plane of illusion, he can never see the truth. but will be drawn in an ocean of deception and hallucinations. It's Leadbeater talking about this. He says, you can catch true glimpses too, but it's kind of random whether what you see is really true or is mixed up with other things or is fragmentary. So the idea is that the records have to be read on the Akashic level. That's why it is more well known, the idea of the Akashic records is more well known than the astral tablets. Now, of course, to be able to see the etheric plane, you need to have a certain kind of sensitivity. To be able to see on the emotional plane or the astral plane, you need to have a deeper kind of sensitivity. Then to be able to see on the mental plane is a far deeper sensitivity. So not everybody can see on the mental plane. So many people are actually seeing the astral records when they think that they are seeing the Akashic records. Now, in order to be able to see the mental plane, you need to be able to go beyond the influence of the emotions. This is why the spiritual training is so important. Because when we see through our physical eyes, we are conditioned by the quality of the eye. If our eye is not working well, then we cannot see the colors correctly or whatever it is. When we see through the astral body, the emotional body, we are conditioned by our own emotional activity. We perceive through the emotional body. The psychic senses on the emotional plane are on the emotional body. So if our emotional life is restless, or if we don't have a good handle on the emotions, the emotional body will always be in the way. This is why yogis are the ones that can develop these powers in a perfect way, because they learn how to steal the emotions at will. So when you want to see on the astral plane, you have to develop the ability to produce a perfect stillness, emotional stillness. And not only the superficial stillness, but the deep unconscious emotional drive that is in many people. You have to have worked on yourself so that emotional subconscious activity also becomes to be calmer. So again, I'm not saying that people cannot see correctly, but if you have some sensitivity and you are interested in this, it is very important to work on this aspect, to start working on your emotional life, and to be able to harmonize the emotions, you need a deeper understanding of reality so that the things that happen in life cannot upset you so easy. You need to develop a deeper spiritual perception so that you can see beyond what is apparent, an understanding in which you understand why life is the way it is and how things happen. So the spiritual work and the spiritual understanding is essential to have a pure or a more accurate psychic perception. So there is another way in which the astral records can be seen, and it's probably more common, a method that is more common in most people, and this is through psychometry. Psychometry is this ability to get in touch with the records that are connected to objects or people, but by being either touching the object or being close to the object. So some people, for example, could not see the records associated with you know, the whiteboard, but if they touch it, then that generates a link to the record. And although I don't know who would like to see the records, but you could see how it was built, for example. So the idea is that psychometry is a preliminary development of clairvoyance in which you still need the link of the physical object, the link of the person. And through psychometry, you can get in touch with the records. Now, the problem with psychometry is that unless you study this subject and you know the different possibilities and you start paying attention to this, you may be psychometrizing, I guess, anything that is around. So, for example, some people who are psychic readers, they will say that they can read your past lives. They may be connecting. I mean, they may be lying completely, or they may be talking about a perception that they have. Now, this perception may be very accurate, or may be a confusion of all different factors. So, you know, all these things do happen, and if you want to verify yourself, go to different people and see, you know, if they more or less agree or not. But the problem with some people who are psychic readers is that they don't know that they are actually using this psychometry unconsciously to perceive the records that are associated with things around you. It may be with an object, with other people. So the visions that they have are not necessarily visions of your past life. But there may be visions of different things. For example, they say your past life you were a tiger. Well, let's stick to the theosophical view. And again, you may believe or not believe the theosophical view. I'm talking from that point of view. I could talk from the point of view of some other traditions too. But let's stick to this. The idea in the theosophical view is that once you are a human being, you don't go back to be an animal. Because there is no purpose for human consciousness can learn nothing from the animal experience. The animal experience was important for the divine spark to get to experience the world as a human being. Once you are there, you keep on going as a human being from a savage to an enlightened being. So it's impossible to have been a tiger if these teachings are right. For the, you know, the argument's sake, let us assume that they are right. Then the explanation would be that the person is probably picking up records, even maybe from the fabric that person was sitting on, or, you know, something like that. Sometimes these things are done in places where there are elements from India and from Asia. This is important to keep in mind that there are many different stimuli that can come to a person, and unless that person is very systematic and by trial and error begins to learn, that person is not going to realize it. Leadbeater said that many of these manifestations are exercised unconsciously. Thus, many crystal gazers, that remember that was what in the early 20th century was very famous, they watch scenes from the past without being able to distinguish them from visions of the present, or other vaguely psychic persons find pictures constantly arising before their eyes without ever realizing that they are actually psychometrizing the various objects which happen to be around them. Now, Leadbeater, for example, you say, well, how does he know, or how much can we trust what he says? I would say probably as much as any other person. I don't go usually by just blind faith. But there is something interesting in his research. He researched in late 19th century and early 20th century the structure of the atoms. When they were in the process of discovering the atoms, there were many that were not discovered, had not been discovered at the time. And he actually discovered a kind of atoms that was unknown to science. They are called isotopes. He described them and published books and articles. Some decades later, a scientist called Aston, he developed a machine through which he could discover these isotopes, and he won the Nobel Prize for that. And actually, in his discourse for the Nobel Prize, he said, by some theosophical means that I don't understand, this person, Leadbeater, was able to discover these isotopes before. And actually, he used one of the names that Leadbeater had, the metaneon, was a name that Leadbeater had assigned, and he used that name. Then the other names that Leadbeater had used were too weird. One was Occultus, another Adiarium, because Adyar is the headquarters of the Theosophical Society, so he had put Adiarium or something. So obviously Aston didn't use those, but Metaneon was a good one because this was an isotope of the atom that is called neon. So he did some research that was actually verified. So that's interesting to keep in mind. And anyway, Leadbeater always says, this is a science, and just as scientists are found to be wrong or not so right, many of our researches can be refined too. There are things, he said, I report exactly what I see, but things that are seen, when as you grow in understanding, you may discover that they were a part of something bigger that you couldn't see, and that would change the perspective. So they were always very honest and humble about that. I say they because there were some others. So we cannot take anything as revelation, but this is their experience in this. So the tablets on the astral light are not very reliable. They are interesting, and if you happen to have that kind of sensitivity, you can learn from it. But try to take it as a scientist would. You know, try to be systematic, to learn, to be open, to see where you may have confused yourself. If you are honest, you will discover all these things. It's a process of learning. Play with it. Now, if you want to generate a business, then you cannot do it. You cannot, if you want to generate a business and make a lot of money, you cannot say, I'm learning. You have to say you have a revelation from God or whatever. Egyptian God is better, usually. I'm just making a joke, but I'm referring to the need to be honest. And even if you are trying to help people with whatever sensitivity you have, it is always good to be honest and say, hey, this is what I can offer you. If this helps you, great, but I don't claim, you know, any omniscience. Just as everything that I'm saying, again, you take it as coming from a person that is sharing certain point of view, and then you are responsible for your own perception of truth. So let us go now to the records on the mental plane, the Akashic records. So Leadbeater says that it is here where the records are exact. If you see the Akashic records, when you see them exactly in the way they are. And it's kind of fascinating how you see the Akashic records. I'll read some explanation or a quote where he explains how these records look. But even though the Akashic records are accurate, there is still the question of bringing down that knowledge. So he says there are several difficulties to bring that knowledge down. First, that anything that you see, you know, the astral plane is the fourth dimension. There are four dimensions there. The three of space that we know, four dimensions of space, leaving time aside. So the three we know, and there is a fourth dimension. On the mental plane, there is one more added dimension. There are five dimensions. So when you try to explain something that you experience in a five-dimensional way, and you try to explain in a language of three dimensions, that in itself produces a limitation as to how you can explain things. So there is an intrinsic limitation in putting into words the perception that happens on higher dimensions of the universe. Now there is another problem that is related to the extent to which the mental vision is developed. As the baby, that at the beginning the baby develops physical vision and see things blurry, and there are some experiments where they show that the baby sees everything upside down, you know, that in the eye, the images are upside down, but somehow consciousness learns to reverse it, but it learns by experience. Many times the baby is trying to touch the head of somebody and goes down. Because at the beginning, the baby sees things upside down. And then with experience, consciousness corrects the perception. So Blavatsky would always say, on the higher planes, many times things are reversed. This is why, you know, sometimes when you dream a number, they say that many times a number is reversed. Some people expect to dream numbers to play in the lottery, or and they say you have to play the right side that you saw it and the reverse, because if your consciousness is not used to perceiving on these planes, it won't correct it. It will see it reversed. So the perception on these planes require a certain learning in consciousness, as I was saying. So even though the records are correct, if your mental vision is not fully developed, that may introduce some error. And the last difficulty which the person has to work on is the ability to see the mental records while still in the physical body. Because, for example, you see Casey, for example, he would go into a trance and talk about all these visions, but he was still on the physical body. So if you don't lose awareness, then the information that you bring through is far more reliable than if you go into an unconscious trance, you see whatever you see, and then you come back and try to impress it on your brain. It's kind of what happens with dreams. When the dream has to be impressed in memory, it gets mixed up with whatever was happening in the brain at the time, and the dream is distorted. So when you are seeing something, the brain is in sync with what you are seeing. But if you lose awareness, the brain starts doing its own automatic thing, and when the vision is brought back, it will get mixed up with the activity of the brain. So in order to see and to bring the vision of the Akashic record in a good way, you need to keep the continuity of consciousness so that the brain doesn't start doing something else. And for that, you need a training in meditation. The way to attain that is to develop the ability to dwell in silence with no thoughts. In technical theosophy, it is said that the records can be seen on each one of these planes have different subplanes. So the first one, the subtlest of them, is normally called the atomic plane of that, or subplane of that plane, which is where matter is in the homogeneous state. It's not like the idea is that all the mental atoms begin to combine themselves and they produce the lower subplanes. But then every combination is a veil in consciousness. So the right perception is always on the highest plane. To train yourself to be able to perceive on these planes, you need to go to the state of consciousness that is beyond any motion, beyond any image, meaning the state of silence. So if you, in meditation, you learn little by little to stay in silence with full awareness, then you are developing the ability to perceive, eventually when you develop psychic senses, or if you already have psychic senses, then you train yourself to perceive from the atomic plane. So as we said, control of emotions, purification of emotions is necessary for the astral tablets, and a pure silent awareness is necessary to develop the ability to see on the highest subplane of the mental plane. I know we are a little over the time. Let me see, read a few explanations of how this looks, and then we can finish and we can go to some questions and answers and comments. So, for example, Leadbeater says that if you are looking at the Akashic records, if you are not thinking of any of them in particular, the records simply form like a background to whatever is going on and have very much the appearance of a film that is running. The action of the reflected figures constantly goes on as though you were watching the actors on a distant stage. At the time he wrote this, the cinema was just being developed. Then he said, if the trained observer turns his attention specially to any one scene of the records, then, this being the plane of thought, he is instantly brought before that record. Just by thinking of it, you are in front of the record. Thus, and this is the example he gives, he wrote some books on ancient history as he saw it from the records, and they are interesting. And he says, thus, if he wished to see the landing in Britain of Julius Caesar, in a moment he finds himself not looking at a picture, but actually standing on the shore among the legionaries, with the whole scene being enacted around him, like a 3D thing, precisely as he would have seen it if he had been in the year 55 BC. The actors are, of course, entirely unconscious of him because they are only reflections, and no effort of his can change the course of their action because it's just a record. So you are there in the scene and everything is going on around you. And he says, not only does he see all that he would have seen physically if he had been there, but also he understands what people say and he's conscious of their thoughts and motives. Because you are on the plane of thought, so you can see what people were thinking or feeling or trying to do or to accomplish. So then he explains that you can pass a record, you know, faster in the future or in the past or stop it. This was at a time when fast-forwarding or rewinding wasn't there. There wasn't any technology for that. But it's basically that. You can fast-forward or rewind. And he has a lot very interesting strategies as to how to find the records. I don't have time to go into that, and I didn't plan on. But there are different strategies to try to get to a record that you may not know about. Either you find the person that you know that was there and follow the record of the person until he was there, or also to determine the time in which things happened. Either you see in the mind of a person that knew the time, what time that person thought it was, or you try to see the stars, how they were, and the precession of the equinox, you know, you can calculate it. He said, it's not always easy. The further you go into the past, the more difficult it is to calculate the time. So, but he did a lot of that. He researched into very further in the past. So the idea, he says that there are records that are even on higher planes, but for example, the record that is on the next plane, that in theosophy is called the Buddhic plane, he says, because the Buddhic plane is a plane of unity, he says, you don't even see in a time frame. He says, on this plane, time and space are no longer limitations. The observer no longer needs to pass a series of events in review. For past, present, and future are alike and simultaneously present to him. For he is now in what is called the eternal now, meaningless as such phrase may sound on the physical plane. So there are further records, but they are really difficult to access. Only almost enlightened people can access those records. But this is more or less what I wanted to share with you regarding the records and the process of development so that you can understand what you are seeing little by little. Regarding the training for all this, I have spoken about that many times in past lectures that you can see on internet and other people. Whenever you see a lecture about spiritual training, you are basically setting the foundations for all this. There are a few techniques of psychic development, but they are usually not very recommended because what you are doing is overdeveloping the psychic aspect without developing the spiritual one. So in the theosophical view, the method is the other way around. Develop the spiritual part, and that spiritual life will naturally develop the psychic powers. So that's usually safer than trying to develop from below up. But again, there are traditions that have different approaches. So that's more or less what I wanted to share. Now we can go to some questions and answers or comments. If I like discussing things, if you don't agree with something, I'm perfectly open to it. I don't claim. And it's the tradition in the Theosophical Society to be open-minded and say, well, this is how I understand it, based on whatever experience I may have, but we don't claim omniscience. So feel free to discuss anything.
So in what way would memory be related to this?
Yeah, actually, memory is reading the Akashic Records. Now, the thing is that there are two kinds of records, the ones that are connected with you and the ones that are not. The ones that are connected with you, because the matter that produced the record is part of you, when you put your consciousness in any of those records, you have the matter that is like magnetically connected to the record. So what we call memory is putting our awareness on the records, and because we are connected with those records, they come to our brain. Now, when you are trying to see the records of something that is not related to you, then that is a different matter, because you have to find a way to connect to that record. This is why some people need the psychometry aspect. They need a physical object to connect to the record through the object. But if you develop your clairvoyance and you are trained there, you learn how to put yourself in rapport with any record that is there. So memory is a natural reading of the Akashic records that are magnetically connected with you. And Blavatsky many times said that memory is not in the brain. You will not find a place in the brain where memory is stored. Memory is in the universe, and we just connect to it.
An Akashic record reader explained the process by saying that the reader is not psychic and does not read the records on the mental plane. Instead, they open to receiving information from the lords of the records and their specific guides who are able to read the records on the mental plane. Mm-hmm. How does this fit into the theosophical view?
Yes, that is something that is quite common today, where it's basically a kind of channeling. So the person, because as you saw, to actually see the Akashic records and all this requires a certain training, many people that say that they are bringing information from the Akashic record, they are not seeing it, and they are relying on the information that some psychic information that they receive. That is a whole subject in itself. Now, what we have to keep in mind is that just as on the physical plane, there are all kinds of entities, there are different kinds of people, there are good people, there are very bad people, there are animals that are tamed and are very nice and dangerous animals, and plants and everything. On the astral plane, there is also a legion of entities. These are described in the theosophical literature. Many of those entities are really not reliable at all, and other entities are reliable. Usually, again, the same happens. You know, the lower you go in the planes, the trickier it is, because the entities on the lower planes are further away from the spiritual planes. The more you moved away from the spiritual planes, there are more veils of matter, and therefore the spiritual spark is obscured. So a person on the physical plane can do terrible things, you know, aggressive things, that person would not be able to do at all on the mental plane, because on the mental plane, the divine spark shines far stronger. So the entities on the astral plane, there are many more tricky entities on the astral plane than on the mental plane. Some of them, there are elementals, as I mentioned a little, there are thought forms, there are devas, there are nature spirits, there are people who may be dead people who are on the astral plane, or people who are sleeping. When we sleep, we are on the astral plane, and you may be awake on the astral plane and travel around, whether you remember it or not. And there are also, it is said that not very frequently, but sometimes spiritual entities come to the astral plane, although their true home is on the spiritual plane, so that is not so frequent. So the only problem with this is that you never know what kind of entity you are connecting to, unless you are able to distinguish them, or perhaps after years of experience. Also, we attract a kind of entity according to the kind of vibration we have. And so purity of physical life, emotional life, mental life is very important to attract the right kind of entities. But many, many entities on the astral plane, they have the thirst to be in touch with the physical plane, because there is, in evolution, there is a process in which consciousness comes from the spiritual planes to the physical, and then it goes back to the spiritual planes with all the experience attained. The entities that are in the process of coming down into the physical matter, they long to be in touch with the physical, just as we long to be in touch with the spiritual. So many times, they will do whatever they can to be in touch with the physical plane, because they are on the planes of the emotions, where they can see your thoughts, emotions. They will, many times, if it is these kind of entities, they will tell you whatever you want to hear to open up the door to them. You know, if you are Christian, they will tell you they are God or Jesus or Mother Mary, or if you are a theosophist, they may tell you they are a master or whatever you are. They will tell you that because they know that you are going to open the door to them, and that's what they want. So they may have certain knowledge of the astral plane, but depending on the degree of evolution, what kind of entity it is, they may be able to live only on the lower parts of the astral plane. So, you know, communicating with entities is tricky in the sense that unless you can see what kind of entity it is, if you are clairvoyant, then you are blindfolded and you just have whatever the entity tells you. As I said, with experience, and if you are honest, you may discover what kind of entity it is, besides what the entity says. But that is another method of reading the Akashic record, but that is a second-hand information. You know, somebody comes and tells you, well, this, and you really don't know. It's not that you are seeing it. But like with anything else in all this, the report may be true, but also may be false. That's something that each person has to determine.
I've heard that the great composers like Mozart and Beethoven have been tapping into a special plane where all the most wonderful music exists. Is that the Akashic level?
Usually the inspiration in music and art and anything that has to do with the aesthetic component come from the Buddhic plane. This is a technical word used in theosophy. This comes from the same root as the Buddha. It's a plane that is related to enlightenment or awakening or to love and unity. As I said, this is the quote that I read that is beyond time and space. This is a plane of unity. And this Buddhic plane, as in the theosophical view, all the it's like a hologram. All the planes are reflected on all the rest of the planes. So there is like a Buddhic subplane on the mental, on the emotional, and even on the etheric and physical. So the composers normally perceive, or the, that inspiration comes from the Buddhic plane, either from the real Buddhic plane or the Buddhic counterpart of each of the planes. I don't know if that would be technically an Akashic record, or is just the nature of the Buddhic plane, which expresses itself in a person that is artistically inclined in that kind of expression. You know, the mental plane expresses itself through us as thinking, and the emotional plane as feeling. The Buddhic plane, one of the expressions is love, compassion, unity, or these artistic kind of things. So I don't know if it is really a record, if they are seeing something that was produced in the past, or it's just the Buddhic effect on the person that they are manifesting.
Just to comment on that, it wouldn't be a... I was going to ask something along those lines, but it wouldn't be a record because it hasn't been yet, mm-hmm. so therefore it was just a divine... Yes. creation or, yes. Or a formulation. Anyway, that isn't what
I would interpret it in that way too.
How does this tie to the more contemporary remote viewing? Is that are remote viewers tapping into the same planes that we're speaking of? And then how? But since once again, there's nothing complete. Looking forward, there's not a record yet. So how do you justify the intuition of what is to come mm-hmm. and the possibilities? Is it all the same mm-hmm. levels?
If I thought that by remote viewing you were talking about perceiving what is going on right now in London, for example, or and that doesn't have to, it's not related to the records themselves, but it's related to the ability of projecting your awareness on these planes. You can project it on the emotional plane or mental plane, you know. But the precognition, the idea of seeing the future, there are actually records of the future to a certain extent. Because everything we do, so if we talk at the level of planes, we produce acts on the physical plane, and they begin to work out their effects to the inner planes. And then there is the bouncing off, and then they are manifested on the physical plane. This process may take even several lifetimes to be manifested, or they may be manifested immediately according to the whole environment, how if things allow the effect to be manifested immediately or not. So there are on these planes, there are records of what is going to happen because they were already produced, but they are not manifested yet. However, because all this is very dynamic, if the same person or the same country or the same, you know, the whoever or whatever produced those causes, if they produced a different cause that is related to the same kind of chain, they can change the event, and new causes are constantly being added. So a seer may see something that is going to happen in the future, and the actual happening may be different. And it's not that the seer saw wrong, it's just that new causes were added before that was manifested. So, you know, everything is quite complex. We tend to think of all this in a simplistic way, which is natural. But everything is very dynamic and complex. But technically speaking, that's what we could say. There are records. Now, there are some things in the records that are produced by such a strong cause that there is hardly ever you can do to prevent that effect from happening. It's just, you know, you produce something very strong that is going to happen. So in those cases, the thing would manifest whether other causes are in between or not. So that would be how you can see the future, the near future at least, in the records.